The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Start! You can call me Bruce.
Bruce Nolan is standing by.
Hey, Wacky Bruce!
Coming to you from an undisclosed location, this is the Bruce Exclusive. And here's your host, Bruce Nolan.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to another edition of the Bruce Exclusive, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Nolan. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Bruce Exclusive. Welcome back. And I was worried I wouldn't have anything to talk about tonight. I was scrambling. I'm not really scrambling. I wasn't scrambling. I had a plan for this week. But the plans get screwed up when the Buffalo Bills go nuclear on their roster. And that is what has happened since the last time you and I have talked. In case you've been living under a rock, or in case the Bruce Exclusive is the only Buffalo Bills content that you ever consume, in which case, folks, you are missing out. This podcast is not designed to be the primary source and only source of all of your Bills content, because I can't do that in one pod per week. You just can't. So let's get you caught up. Over the last 48 hours, I'm recording this pod at 6:50 p.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday, March 6th. So if something has happened after that, it wouldn't be included on this pod, although I don't know what else they would throw at me tonight. This feels to me like the free agency where I was in charge of doing the Breaking Buffalo Rumblings podcasts, and the Buffalo Bills signed a couple free agents, and I went and did it. And then they signed a couple more, and I went and did a second pod. And then they traded for Stephon Diggs, and I had to do three pods in the same night. That was a night. So hopefully they don't do that to me again. But to recap, the Buffalo Bills traded offensive lineman Ryan Bates to the Chicago Bears for a fifth-round pick. They cut Jordan Poyer. They cut Tre'Davious White. They cut Deonte Hardy. They cut Mitch Morse. And they renegotiated the contract of Von Miller. Let's start with the Ryan Bates trade that now does not occur in a vacuum, because you know what the plan is at center for the Buffalo Bills. And the plan at center is Connor McGovern. I said this on social media, and I will say it now. I didn't love it. I don't like it. Offensive line depth is one of the most difficult things to find in the entire league. Take off your Bills hat for a second and go and look around at offensive lines across the league. Everyone is scrambling for capable bodies. Losing one of them in exchange for a fifth and very, very little cap savings does not appeal to me. Well, Bruce, they saved $5 million in 2025. Okay, couple things. Number one, you don't necessarily know how McGovern's going to do at center, and it would be nice to have the option for 2025 to have a guy you could plug in as a high-floor player that already has been around the team at center for that cap price. Because if you don't have McGovern go well at center, then whoever you try and fill the hole with in free agency is definitely going to cost you more than $5 million. Oh, well, you know, you could just draft somebody. Yes, you could use a a draft pick on him. But do you know how many fifth round offensive linemen are as good as Ryan Bates? The answer's not a lot at all. Go back over the last 10 years, 20 years if you'd like, and go through every offensive lineman that was drafted in the fifth round, and the overwhelming majority of them never made it to the status that Ryan Bates was at, which is a solid, reasonable, feel okay about it player. And that's a huge, huge thing. Well, Bruce, you can use a first or a second day pick. Yes, you absolutely could. Or you could have kept Ryan Bates and used the first and second pick, second day picks on somebody else and not created a hole. I'm in favor of trading the Russell Bodines of the world for day three picks because I didn't under any circumstance want Russell Bodine actually playing. The alternative to that was cutting Russell Bodine. The alternative to Bates was keeping him. Well, Bruce, maybe he asked for a trade. Okay. He asked for a trade. People can ask for trades and not have them be granted. Like, that's completely reasonable. It's still a business. And I'm not willing or thrilled to give up valuable offensive line depth for a fifth round pick. So I don't love it. I like it even less now that the Buffalo Bills cut Mitch Morse. Well, Bruce, Connor McGovern will play center. Recall the discussions about Connor McGovern when we signed him as a free agent. The discussions were he wasn't great at center, but once they moved him to guard, he got a lot better. And now the Bills are moving him back to center. So that doesn't mean he won't be a better center than he was in Dallas, because that's a very reasonable possibility. He could be. But that was the conversation, and we haven't seen anything since then that would indicate that he'll be a better center. In fact, we have seen him be a passable guard. So now there's a possibility you are making two offensive line positions worse than they were. Now, thankfully, the Buffalo Bills re-signed David Edwards, and I'm pleased about that. I think he did a good job as a jumbo package tight end as the sixth offensive lineman. He has experience with Aaron Cromer from his time in LA, but the Bills are negative two in valuable offensive linemen now over the last couple of days. They lost three. They got back one. They're net negative two. I don't ever even want to be negative one in that. That's how valuable offensive line depth is for me. Yeah, Bruce, he played 35 snaps. Ryan Bates did. And the Bills were incredibly blessed to not have meaningful injuries on the offensive line. Do we not remember all the other years when they were not incredibly blessed? Not having offensive line depth can absolutely tank your season. So I'm not thrilled about it. And I think it's completely fair to not be thrilled about it. But the Buffalo Bills have decided that they want to deal with their cap and potentially, we don't know the story behind Ryan Bates, maybe do right by the player, through all of these sets of moves simultaneously. And there's more than one way to skin that cat. I had mentioned when the Buffalo Bills had traded Ryan Bates, I said, you know, it's not really much of a cap help. It wasn't really on my list of things to do. And someone said, well, what was on your list? And I said, restructure Josh Allen, restructure Ed Oliver, cut Deontay Hardy, cut Jordan Poyer. Those were the things that were on the top of my list. So far, it looks like a Josh Allen restructure is basically going to happen. We don't know about Ed Oliver, but all those things on those lists very well might happen. But you didn't have to do the Bates thing for cap purposes. You could have done it a different way. But the Bills have made their decision. There's lots of ways to get in the door. I want to tell you a story. Now, before I start the story, I would like to tell you that part of it is a lie. I have adjusted part of this story to make it more appropriate for consumption. So that'll be kind of the fun discussion that you can have amongst your friends about, did you hear Bruce's story? What did he adjust? I think it'll be fairly obvious. On Saturday, I was feeling kind of tired. And I told my wife, hey, I'm going to go lay down. Do you want to come take a nap with me? And she said, sure. But have you ever had that discussion with your wife where she says, sure, but she doesn't really sound enthusiastic about it? It's not sure. It's a sure. And I was like, okay, fine. I guess I'll just go nap by myself. Then I was kind of teasing her and, you know, being jokey about it. I wasn't actually offended, but I did that whole mock I'm offended thing. I was like, oh no. She's like, no. I want to come take a nap with you. I was like, no. You just stay there. And I jokingly ran into the bedroom and I shut the door and I locked it. And she ran up behind me, but I was too late. I had already locked the door, and I was laughing, and she was laughing, and she was kind of pounding on the door like, hey, you let me in this second, right? And I was like, no, no, if you want to be like that, be like that. And a few minutes later, there was silence, and I heard some clicking and some tinking on the other side of the door. My wife had gone out and gotten the toolbox and was removing the door handle to the door to try to get in. This is the kind of relationship my wife and I have. It's very silly. We built a pillow fort a couple weekends ago. But this is the kind of thing. She's like, oh, well, heck with you. I'm just going to remove the door handle. It was certainly a creative way to get in the door. She could have, you know, tried to go around and go in a window. Maybe she could have tried to pick the lock, potentially. But instead, she decided that the ideal way to get in the door was to remove the handle entirely. That was her method of doing it. That's what the Buffalo Bills are doing. They're just removing the handle. They're just cutting people. Have you noticed that there's almost no simple restructures in this maneuver? They are not taking the New Orleans Saints approach to the salary cap this year. They are ripping the Band-Aid off. They're not restructuring everyone and extending people to try and lower the cap hits and punt out and punt out and punt out. They are taking a different approach. They are removing the handle. Now, whether or not they're removing the handle or flying off the handle is primarily based on your opinion of the moves. Just for your P's and Q's and making sure you know all the stuff, flying off the handle is an American expression. It refers to the axe head of a handle. Like, it's the axe head is really loose, and when you swing it, the axe head will actually fly off the handle. That's where the expression comes from. That's the origin, in case anybody was wondering. The people that the Buffalo Bills chose to move on from were older, overpaid relative to production, or hurt. Saran Neal, overpaid relative to production. Special teamer, expensive for a special teamer. Tre'Davious White, hurt, unfortunately. Mitch Morse, older. Jordan Poyer, older. If you have to choose to remove the handle, make sure you're removing the screws and not trying to pry it off. Right? The screws are already there. They're low-hanging fruit. They have holes in them. You can find the matching screwdriver head, and you can remove them. I mean, you could try and remove the handle by just grabbing a crowbar and just prying the door handle off, right? But that's not the most efficient way of doing it. The Buffalo Bills have made some decisions that are emotionally a little upsetting. Tre'Davious White, one of the most joyous players on the team, the heartbeat of that defense. Mitch Morse was a tremendous leader on the offensive side of the ball. Jordan Poyer has been a warrior and an effective player for 7 years. For this Buffalo Bills team. Emotionally, this is tough, for sure. But people who are older, people who are hurt, people who are overpaid relative to production. Deontay Hardy, overpaid relative to production. These were the targets for a reason. The thing I don't like is giving up offensive line depth. The rest of it, I understand. Now, the Von Miller thing is something we should talk about, because Von Miller's contract was not restructured in a simple restructure standpoint. It was renegotiated. And if anyone was going to move this type of move, it was going to be Von Miller. What have we said about Von Miller in the past? He's incredibly optimistic. He believes in manifestation of amazing things. Von Miller took a base salary pay cut. He got some of that back in a signing bonus. And then had incentives that have targets higher than his previous number. It was essentially a pay cut with the opportunity to earn back a little more than he had before if he hits these things. And then some of that is offset with a small additional signing bonus. So it does impact future cap, but not as much as we save now. It's still a net positive in cap room for the Buffalo Bills. And if anyone was going to do this, it was going to be a player like Von Miller. So that's an overview. Some of them I understand completely. Poyer, White, Hardy, Neal. Some of them I don't like. Morse, Bates. Some of them I like very much. Re-signing David Edwards, the renegotiation of Von Miller's contract. It doesn't always have to be everything yes or everything no, everything great or everything bad, because no organizations are like that. No organizations bat zero, and no organizations bat 1,000. So I'm not going to assume that they're going to bat 1,000, and I'm not going to assume they're going to bat zero. We'll evaluate each thing in the offseason as it comes. And for a lot of people, that was a lot at once. And those are my thoughts on it. We are going to take a quick break. Stick with me. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody, and thank you for joining me for this edition of The Bruce Exclusive, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Nolan. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram, at Bruce Exclusive. Welcome back. Told the story about my wife breaking into the bedroom and how there's many ways to do that. She chose to take off the handle that already had the screws on it. She was flying off the handle by taking off the handle. Now we're going to talk about draft evaluations. Because before all this stuff, we were all knee-deep in the combine and very excited about the potential of new players coming to our Buffalo Bills. I'm going to go ahead and say something like this. Draft rankings are hurting our ability to have good dialogue. I understand we need to do them. I understand you need to have a discussion about players in a vacuum. But I want to tell you something. If you're part of a dynasty league, you know this, but I want to share something for those of you who are not part of a dynasty fantasy football league. If I were to rank for you all of the wide receivers in this class, by my opinion of where they fall, and then after the draft, I were to rank them in the order on a big board in which I would like them, it will not be the same. Why not? If I have Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze, 1, 2, 3, and then I have 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, I rank 8 receivers. And then after the draft, I go to create my big board for wide receivers. Those 8 might look very different. Why? Because we intrinsically recognize that part of what determines whether or not you are successful in the NFL, which is what you would base a dynasty draft on, is situation. Where do you get drafted? Situation is a huge part of your success. But what happens is we take the rankings that existed before the draft, we crystallize them, and then we circle back 3 years later and go, who got it quote unquote right and who got it quote unquote wrong. But what you say about a prospect is so much more important than where you have them ranked. Because qualitatively, you can be exactly right about a prospect and still have them ranked below another prospect. You could totally nail it. If I say, hey, the fourth guy on this list, they need A and B in order to succeed. And this ninth guy on the list, they need X, Y, and D to succeed. So the fourth guy on the list needs A and B, and the ninth guy on the list needs X, Y, and Z. And then the ninth guy on the list gets X, Y, and Z and succeeds. And the fourth guy on the list doesn't get A and B and doesn't succeed. Was I wrong in my ranking? Probably not. But somebody will come back to that ranking that they found on Twitter.com and Twitter.com/home. And they will go, ha, Bruce, he had this guy at 9 ranked way below this guy at 4. Rankings are cool. We like them. I'm going to do it. I'm going to tell you what the rankings are. But they're not nearly as good as qualitatively what you say about a player. Because once you go to the NFL, your trajectories can vary wildly. You ever heard the phrase, a team can bust a player more than a player busts a team? That's a real statement. Players' development, their trajectory, is incredibly based on where they go. The way that I historically rank players is I rank them based on tiers, and I do the tiers based on what I think is necessary to achieve the same results. So I'll give you an example. We're going to isolate the variable because that's an important thing. I'm going to hold result as the exact same thing. Let's say, for example, the results that I'm crystallizing are multiple 1,200-yard receiving seasons. That's what I go. So now I view every prospect through what would be necessary for me to get multiple 1,200-yard receiving seasons from this player. The more things that would have to happen in order for that to occur, the lower they are. I'll give you a great example. This is not my exact grading system. I'm just trying to simplify this for audio format. A first round grade could be, okay, this player needs to develop reasonably and go to a team that will throw the ball reasonably and throw it to them. That's what would need to happen for them to have multiple 1,200-yard receiving seasons. Okay, what about a day two grade? Well, for a day two grade, they would have to develop meaningfully, not reasonably, develop meaningfully, go to a tween team that will throw the ball, throw it to you, and specifically fit you into an offense. You're a player that needs a specific plan for you. You can't just go in there and get thrown in at any reasonable receiver position with any reasonable route tree and succeed. You need specific tailoring of the offense in order to achieve that. That's a little bit more. So you need a little bit more to happen to achieve the same results. What about day three grade? Okay, well, you have to develop significantly, not reasonably, not meaningfully, significantly. You have to go to a team that'll throw the ball. They have to throw it to you, specifically fit you in the offense, and get lucky with the depth chart in front of you, maybe an injury, maybe some free agent cuts. You have to get a little lucky. That's an example. That is not my grading system, but that's an example. So what we did was we held the result. We isolated and held the result as a constant in the formula and then said, okay, what level of development, what type of items would be necessary for this player to achieve that constant goal? And then the more that would be necessary for you to achieve that goal, the lower the grade is. But what if that day two guy gets everything that they need, but that day one guy didn't get what they needed to achieve that goal? Were you wrong in ranking the day two guy below the day one guy? No. You said they'll succeed if this happens, and that happened. And the day one guy, you said you'll succeed if this happens, and that didn't happen. So the rankings aren't just like, this is a better player, because there's an entire trajectory. Yes, a lot of that is how good they are right now. But as you'll see from anybody's rankings, it's a mixture of how good you are now and how good you could be if these things happen in the future. It's floor and ceiling. And the variance between those two things can drastically change the difference in where you ranked them and where they ended up. So keep that in mind when it comes to reading rankings. The qualitative is far more important than the quantitative, but we don't spend as much time on the quantitative because it's not easy for us to dunk on people. And that's really what we want to do. We want to dunk on people. But it's sometimes a little bit intellectually dishonest when we do it in this way. So I'm going to share with you my wide receiver rankings. And we're super far into the pod. Thank you, Buffalo Bills. Salary cap moves. So I'm going to try and do it as fast as I possibly can. I spent most of my time scouting, working on wide receivers, specifically because I knew that it was a focus. I have like three linebackers scouted. So I'm a little behind, but here are the wide receivers, and I just did the top ones. Now, I've done more than this, but this is just the top ones. I can't go through all of them. Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze. That's the first tier. then there is a notable gap between those three and the next tier. The next tier is Brian Thomas Jr., Adonai Mitchell, Ladd McConkey. Tier break, Ricky Pearsall, Javon Baker, Roman Wilson. Tier break, Xavier Leggett, Xavier Worthy, Jalen Polk, Brendan Rice, Troy Franklin. Then a tier break, Malachi Corley, Jalen McMillan, Keon Coleman. Now, I'm going to touch on some highlights here. A lot of you are going to have a discussion about Keon Coleman. A lot of people did not like my place for Keon Coleman. My comp for Keon Coleman is Mohamed Sanu. So Mohamed Sanu, like Keon Coleman, had impressive natural catching technique, but he wasn't great as a contested catch player, and he didn't get great separation. As a general rule, the higher percentage of your college catches that occur as contested, the worse off a sign that is. Now, obviously, you can have a situation where your quarterback play is so bad that you get open and the quarterback is so late and so inaccurate that targets that should not be contested somehow become contested. But overall, there is a significant negative correlation between the higher percentages of your college catches that are contested and your NFL productivity. Because as a general rule, if they're high in contested rate, then that means you weren't getting open. And if you're not getting open in college, then you're definitely not getting open in the NFL. And that's the situation with Keon Coleman. I do think he's a good athlete. I think he has natural catching technique. I think anyone who watched the gauntlet with Combine will tell you that. But I don't think he's as good at the catch point as some of his highlight reel would indicate. And I don't think he separates. But you can have a long, productive career. Mohamed Sanu had multiple 700-yard receiving seasons. You can have a long, productive career as a possession power slot or an outside power possession player with natural catching technique as being your calling card, especially if you can get some yak in there. And I think Keon Coleman can give you that. But that type of player falls under the category of, hey, you got to make sure that you're doing what you can. He's not an isolation shooter. He can't make his own shot. So you have to kind of build around him. You got to put him in the slot, make sure you can get a power slot player in there. I think he has to be that kind of player. That doesn't mean he can't be productive. It just means, as I mentioned earlier, more things have to happen for him to be a 1,200-yard receiver multiple years, in my opinion. And that's the reason why he's there. It's right next to Malachi Corley. Malachi Corley, I think, is a slot-only player who gives you great yak ability. He basically runs like a running back. But you have to plan around that. That doesn't mean he can't be a good player. It just requires more effort and more things to go right and to happen in order for you to achieve that. Versus someone at the top like Rome Odunze or Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison Jr., who it's a lot closer to just don't screw this up. They have the ability to create on their own. You can put them in multiple locations. You can have them run different routes. More options, more traits give you more options. Fewer traits give you fewer options, which give you a narrower path to success. That's the way it works. Now, in regards to Adonai Mitchell and Brian Thomas Jr. are the ceiling plays of the top couple tiers of the NFL draft. Both of them I would consider to be on the rawer side of football. I think Xavier Leggett is probably also a little bit raw, but I think that Mitchell and Thomas Jr. are rawer players, right? Thomas Jr. did not run a significant route tree in college. Now, I think you can have him make an impact early on just with the skill set that he has right now, but that ceiling is impressive because he has the ability to do those things. You can see the traits that would start to allow him to be able to do those things, but he hasn't yet. Adonai Mitchell, similar thing, right? There's some tweaks I need to see from a route running standpoint, but he has the tools. So that's a ceiling play versus someone like Ladd McConkey, who I think is really good right now. I think he's really good right now. Now, he's not as elite of an athlete as Brian Thomas and Adonai Mitchell are. But if you go back and you watch Adonai Mitchell in college at Georgia before he transferred, you start to see some of the things that make you feel better about some of the things that you didn't see from his Texas tape. Like, oh, I know he can do it. I just saw him do it. He didn't do it this year, but he did do it before, so I feel better about that. But Ladd McConkey, not a slot-only player, can play on the outside right now, just not as dynamic. A good athlete, better athlete than perhaps given credit for, but not that same level of elite explosion from McConkey. I will say that the tier that has Ricky Pearsall, Javon Baker, and Roman Wilson, that's my tier. That's the Bruce tier. I really like all three of these players, and they are the three that are higher for me than they are for most. Those of you who listened to this pod last year will remember that I had some pretty fervent discussion about a certain Michigan State wide receiver who went to the Green Bay Packers. And I just said, I don't know why we don't love Jaden Reed. That's the way I feel about these three players. I don't know why people don't like them. I literally don't. The route running is evident. The athleticism is there. I don't get it. Like, why don't we like these players? I'm sitting around going, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. Am I the only one? And the answer is very likely. I could be the only one who has them this high. And I could crash and burn. But this tier is the, I think they're underrated and could evolve into a wide receiver one if these things happen. The Xavier Leggett, Xavier Worthy, Polk, Rice, Franklin tier, that is the, hey, these players can come in and help your offense right now if you put them in the right role. Worthy and Franklin are really, really small slash thin people. They can come in and be successful right now. In fact, they can come in and have a bigger and more effective impact week one and year one than some of the people in the second tier. Brian Thomas and Adonai Mitchell, I can envision a world where Franklin, Xavier Leggett, and Xavier Worthy come in right now to a team, right away, and are more productive year one than Thomas and Adonai Mitchell. I can envision that because they just have to go to the right spot that will use them in the right way. Xavier Leggett runs fast, jumps high, thicker than a Snicker. Like, that's the way you got to use him. If you're expecting really nuanced route running from Xavier Leggett right now, you're not going to get it. But you can get an impact week one, year one, if you put him in the right spot. Love to see him in a simplified route tree his first year. Maybe hand him the ball a couple times. Get him in motion. Move him around. Get the ball in his hands. Don't ask him to be a nuanced, fluid route runner down the field right away. But that could absolutely happen. Same thing with Xavier Worthy. If he goes to a place that is going to consistently put him in a spot where you can't get your hands on him as a defense, use the cheat motion. Do what you have to do to make sure no one can physically touch him because he's really, really, really light. And he can get very, very easily jostled by bigger, stronger physical defenders in the NFL and messed up on a timing route. But if you can shield him, if you can protect him with your offensive system, he can do more damage week one and year one than some of the people in tier two. But again, more needs to happen for him to be successful. That's why he's lower. And that's the way that I look at this. So when you see rankings like this, I hope I've done a good job of explaining that. It's almost like archery. I'm going to finish up with this. You are probably familiar with the word sin. Those of you who are religious, you've heard this word, sin. But the English word sin is actually originated from an archery term. It means to miss the mark. Anything that is off the mark is considered to be a sin. That's an archery term. Now, the degree in which you are off the mark matters, but it's still a sin. It's how much is it? This is the way that I look at rankings. It's how far are they from being the type of prospect where literally you can't miss. Now, there's no such thing as a can't miss prospect. Those players don't exist. But how far removed are they? How many distances, how many tiers do you have to go to make sure this player can be successful? Because we've seen fifth round, sixth round, seventh round receivers go and be really good. So a bunch of things need to happen for that to happen. They develop at a crazy rate. Right? That's a big thing. They develop just something that nobody thought of a bunch of players in front of him get hurt. And all of a sudden they have an opportunity that you wouldn't normally afford a seventh round pick. Things like that happen and they bridge the gap between someone who's should have gone to the first round and someone who didn't go in the first round. So when you think about rankings and tiers, think about it as distance from bullseye. It doesn't mean you can't be really good. It's just how far are you away from that now? What needs to happen in order for you to be successful? What needs to happen right now for me to be successful is for me to stop talking because I've gone way over because of the Buffalo Bills. And you know what? That's okay. I hope you'll forgive me. But if not, well, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles. I'm Bruce Nolan, Buffalo Rumblings.